Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly minisode where we dig into the things that we've been watching recently. I'm Terry.
I'm Mary Beth, and I literally just remembered something that I read this week that I want to talk about that I literally forgot about until just now. So, I'm going to throw in a curveball because I just remembered something I wanted to talk about.
Curveballs. I love curveballs.
I'm so sorry.
I love curveballs.
We're chatting about Vampire Ballerinas, Panic Fest, a book that I read this week. And then we listen to some Gladys Knight and go to Erection Cove.
Erection Cove!
Oh my God, I can't wait to go to Erection Cove. I'm so excited to go to Erection Cove.
Just need to call you Jackie Boy.
That's all I need.
All right, well, let's... Before we get into Panic Fest, let's talk about Vampire Ballerinas and your book.
Yeah, I want to just touch on Vampire Ballerinas quickly, because as we are recording this, the day that I flew back from LA, I was super lucky, Universal flew me out to see Abigail and do the press junket at that. So if I sound insane, it's because I didn't sleep and had a red-eye flight, and I've been all over the place. Y'all, Abigail fucks.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm really, really, really happy to see Radio Silence doing this outside of Scream. Like, again, their screams were fine. Like, I have nothing against them. I thought they were pretty enjoyable with what they were. But it's really nice to see them back doing original stuff. Like, this feels like Ready or Not vibes. Like, okay. So, for anyone who isn't familiar with Abigail, it is essentially a horror heist movie where a group of ragtag criminals kidnap a young girl named Abigail, bring her to a house in the middle of nowhere, and they are tasked to watch over her for 24 hours by a man played by Giancarlo Esposito. And as the night wears on, they realize that this little girl is not just a little girl. She's a vampire. And there are lots of other twists and turns along the way. So in watching it at first, I was like, I kind of wish that they had kept the vampire ballerina a secret. I understand it's kind of the big marketing thing. But there is enough that crazy shit that happens in the back half that they don't show in any of the trailers or anything that it's it's great.
Oh, good.
Because I was worried about that. I was like, okay, so are we spoiling the whole thing? And right. Then just it's just the same. I was like, I don't really know where they're going to go with it. And I like where they went with it. It's gory shit. Just it's not really a spoiler, but we're back at Radio Silence making people explode. So that's exciting. There's a lot
Love
of blood.
That.
Melissa Barrera rules as Joey. Oh, yeah. The whole ensemble is incredible.
It looks like a great cast.
Yeah, and I was super lucky. I got to interview all of the cast, and they're all just chaotic gremlins, and it's really cool. Kevin Duran was really he actually almost steals the show in the movie because he plays a Quebecois alcoholic muscle guy who kind of sounds like Yogi Bear. and he's really good. Catherine Newton's incredible. Dan Stevens is incredible. He's got a New England accent the whole time, which is very funny. Everyone's just kind of hamming it up. And it's just Kevin Durant is in was in a Resident Evil movie. He's in
Tragedy Girls.
Aces. Yeah, Tragedy. Yeah, he's in a bunch of stuff. And it's just anyway, Abigail is so much fun. Gnarly vampires, but so I wore my 30 Days of Night shirt at the junket, and Radio Silence that was one of our main inspirations for vampires, and I was yes, 30 Days of Night supremacy. So yeah. Get excited because they have like really good shark teeth and it's a lot of just like ripping up flesh and stuff. It's awesome.
It's really fun.
A good time and it's funny. And this is like their brand of horror comedy where like it's funny, but it's really bloody on top of it. So like it feels earned. Because again, I'm picky about horror comedy and this goes back to like, again, like the Ready or Not vibes of like, funny and like but like in a way that like makes sense with the movie. It all just like gels really well together. Highly recommend. That is out this week, so it's a good time at the movie. So if you are looking for something to see in the theater, that it'll be a really fun one to see with a crowd. So if you don't like that experience, don't see this in theaters, but like this is definitely gonna be like a like fun crowd movie. So take that however you will about how you like your cinematic horror experiences.
I can't wait. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for this one. I might try to convince my friends to go see it this weekend.
You should. It was real fun. Highly recommend. Yeah. And it's not like super duper scary. It's don't like gore. But like it's not like terrifying, you know what I mean?
Okay,
like, it's
fun, that's good. Because I have a friend that doesn't mind horror, but she gets anxious, and so she doesn't like to see them. But she doesn't mind the concept of horror. It's the ones that like make her feel anxious. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. This one, it's like it's so fast paced and like kind of like it's like fun horror. You know what I mean? Like, everything about it is very much like fun. Entertaining first horror, but like I don't mean that as a bad thing at all, like,
right?
It's just like a good fucking time.
Hell yeah.
It's fun. It's funny enough that it doesn't get too scary.
And then what was the book?
Quickly, the book. Okay, so I read The Day of the Door by Laurel Hightower. Laurel Hightower wrote Below, which is a Mothman book. Day of the Door is from Ghoulish Books, which is founded by friend of the show Max Booth III. This is the cover.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Gnarly.
And the cover alone sold me when I saw it online.
Yeah, that would have sold me too.
Hightower. And so there was like things online about it that I had seen. So I ordered it and I read it in a weekend. I got it on Saturday and I finished it on Sunday morning. I couldn't put it down. So Day of the Door, it is about the Lasco siblings. There are four of them, two sons, two daughters. But when they are teenagers, the oldest boy, Sean, dies very violently. And they believe that their mother murdered him. And now flash forward about, I can't remember. Yeah, 2 decades later, they're all grown up and fucked up in their own particular ways around their brother's death, but also their mom's abuse and her continued manipulation. Their mom hires a paranormal investigative team to make a video about their experience and how she ruined her family because something possessed her. And so they all go back to the house where this happened and secrets are revealed along the way. And it's a really good haunted house book.
Okay.
That I really appreciated how it handles family trauma. So if you don't want like a heavy thing, because this is very much about hauntings as a manifestation of like abuse and of like extreme emotional turmoil in the household. Which I think, because this is not a book that's all of trying to dig into the past of the house in terms of like who lived here before, but more tapping into like an extreme look at how abusive parents can like excuse and gaslight their behavior.
Okay.
So it's heavy. It's heavy as shit. Like it's not an easy read. But the way that Hightower writes is very straightforward, but also, like, very, it gets to, like, the core of what, how these relationships make you feel. And while I myself didn't deal with a lot of this, like, not a lot of stuff that occurs in this book, it felt very resonant to me as someone who grew up with an abusive parent. And so it hits that core really well, especially about, like, how you seem like you function and like you have a good job and you seem like you're doing well, but like once you look under the surface, like you're like deeply troubled and fucked up in like the ways you have like interpersonal relationships. So it's like, it's creepy, it's weird, but I couldn't put it down, and it's out now from Ghoulish Books. I think it's only $12. So if you're looking for a really good haunted house, creepy read, I highly recommend The Day of the Door by Laurel Hightower.
How long is it? Is it a short book?
It's like 200 pages. So it's like a full novel. Mm-hmm. It's a full novel, 200, but it's like on the shorter side. So it's a pretty quick read.
Cool. I love the cover, man.
Mm-hmm. It's really
Trevor
good.
Henderson did the cover.
Okay, that's what I thought. I wanted to say it was Trevor Henderson, but I was going to look it up. For, yeah, it's a Trevor Henderson cover. He also did the Below cover, the Mothman cover. Okay. And like, this is an image like in the book. Like, there's a creature that looks like this in the book.
Oh, sweet.
We're not getting like full on like gross ghosts, but we're getting like. Like fucking uncanny valley scary as shit ghosts. So yeah, highly recommend. I really love her as a writer. It's very like straightforward prose. It's not anything like flowery or super poetic, and I like that. It's very just like down to earth, grounded, focusing on like interiority of her characters. So
awesome.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to check that one out.
Highly recommend. It's a quick read and it's creepy as shit. I actually got a little bit freaked out when I, like, closed it at night.
Sold.
So. Yeah, I know. That was nice. It was a cool feeling. That was my extra stuff pinned on to, like, the actual meat of the discussion, which is Panic Fest, which
yes,
just
part completed. One, because I will probably come back with more next week, because I have failed in my watching.
I probably won't, because I gotta be real to myself. I don't know if I have capacity in my brain hole to watch any more fucking movies.
I get it.
I just want to watch Real Housewives. But anyway, what have you watched from Panic Fest that you have liked so far?
So the one big one that I wanted to talk about for sure was one I think you have seen before, and you I think you talked about it on the podcast before, but it's What You Wish For. It has Nick Stahl in it, and
yes,
he plays.
I saw that at Fantastic Fest. This movie fucking rules. Tell me
it
everything.
It does. Yeah, so I've been wanting to see it ever since you talked about it, and I think Joe Lipsett also had seen it and was saying it was really good. So I was really excited to see it when it's at Panic Fest, but they didn't want reviews out of Panic Fest. They just want a blurb. So I was like, okay, well, I could talk about it on Scarred. So, yeah.
Right now, bitch.
Exactly. Consider this your blurb. You've been blurbed. So What You Wish For is about Ryan, who is a down on his luck chef who has gambling problems, and he flees the country and goes to hang out with his friend, who is a professional chef that works for this company that caters to high end clientele, where they pay millions of dollars, and then meet at random places and the chef prepares food. And here's the thing. I've seen enough of these kinds of movies that I immediately went like, oh, this is what's happening. And I was right. I'm not going to spoil it in case you don't have the same kind of brain that I have. But I was like, I know where this is probably going to go, but that didn't make it any less interesting.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think it telegraphs it pretty early, but I think it's, again, one of those movies that, like, it's worth it, and the way it all, like, comes together, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It didn't matter to me, at least.
No, it didn't matter to me either, because I was watching it with my Cass, my roommate, was like, oh, this is about X, and sure enough, it was. But the thing is that, like, once we get into the thick of things, and he ends up getting caught in this big web of lies and murder and other things, it becomes like kind of a tense, like awkward dinner party that he is unfortunately having to cater to. And it's funny in spots. It has a dark sense of humor. The cast is very good, particularly Tamsin Topolsky, who plays
She's so good.
She's so good. She's like the person that runs this company that he's finding himself roped into. And she is great. She was my favorite part of the movie. Although Nick Stahl did a great job in this. I haven't seen him in a very long time, but it's just, it's very, it's very good. Even though, like I said, I knew where it was going, particularly with what it was setting up, but that didn't take away from it. I had a great time with this one. It's really fun. It's a really fun movie. Really good thriller. And that, I think, is coming out in May, is it, I think?
Oh, is it good? I couldn't
I think it's coming out soon.
Good, because it's real. That's a good one.
It's coming out the very end of May, it looks like, in a limited release. But yeah, that was good. What You Wish For. A Scarred for Life certified, I would say.
And it's really well shot. Everything is like very pretty, very... There's going to be comparisons to The Menu because it has to do with chefs and stuff like that. That's not a spoiler at all. It's like, there's just, it's inevitable that there's going to be The Menu comparison. So get ready for that. But it's not The Menu though. It's like, like stylish and about chefs, but like, that's pretty much where the similarities. But I'm glad culinary horror is having like a, getting more. Because I just love showing my parents culinary horror and having
them
rate it. That's my favorite. So, I should have to watch this.
You should.
I should just have a series where I have my parents watch chef horror movies and, like, talk about them. I would get on a list, but I want my stepdad to tell me how he would... My stepdad would, like, very earnestly tell me how he would probably prepare, like, human flesh. So, anyhoozle.
Yeah, speaking of human flesh, another movie that I saw that I enjoyed a little less, but I still think it's a good first feature, and I'm curious to see what this writer and director, Amy Kuge, I apologize for butchering her last name, will do next, but it's Cannibal Mukbang. Did you see this one?
No, I haven't yet, but it's been on my list. It's been on a bunch of stuff, and it's going to a bunch of other festivals, too, this like spring and summer. So tell me all about it, because I do really want to see it.
Yeah, so Cannibal Mukbang is about a very awkward, but very handsome man named Mark, who works as like a customer service rep online. He works from his home. He doesn't really have much in the way of relationships. He has an overbearing asshole of a brother that he loves, because he and his brother were in foster homes and his brother has been kind of taking care of him, but like, so he lets a lot of his bad behaviors, like he is a misogynist and a gross dude, slide. And he has literally the weirdest meet cute with a woman named Ash, who he sees her at a convenience store, like a gas station convenience store, and he's like awkward around her, and they end up both reaching for the same thing in the refrigerator. And then like, as he's leaving, she accidentally hits him with her car. And then he wakes up and he is at her place. Yeah. You know, as one does at her place, and she is very, I would say very sure of her sexuality and very sure of who she is, whereas he is like the most awkward and inept person ever. And they start talking, and before long he finds out that she is kind of an influencer. She does mukbang online. And for those that don't know, mukbang are usually very petite people that will sit there with giant bowls of food and eat the whole thing for viewers. I don't get it, but it's not for me to get.
Let me, can I give a brief history of this? Because
yes,
I
please.
Find it very fascinating. Okay.
It's from South Korea.
Yes. Okay. I have done like a deep dive on this several times because I think it is so fascinating, because it started as one thing in Korea and it evolved to something else when Westerners got a hold of it, of course.
Of course.
If any of this is incorrect information, please someone let me know. A lot of my information is gathered from like TikTok sources and like, you know, the internet, like internet places. So it's not like any official source. Right. So if I get anything incorrect, I apologize. But essentially, like, there's a lot of issues in Korea with like social isolation, especially with like work culture. It's like similar, there's similar things in Japan about just like social isolation, and a lot of mukbang channels were like kind of started to combat that as like there's like someone with you while you eat. And it started kind of as a phenomenon in that way, and a uniquely South Korean thing, again, because of how like a lot of people don't have a lot of like a social life. And then I think because it got so popular, and you know, people had these really popular channels, and a lot of it was live streaming, so like they were eating these massive meals on live streams. And it wasn't always super petite women, but a lot of it was. And it wasn't necessarily, like, there, I think there's, like, a fetish element to some of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how deeply. I think it depends. But, like, if you watch some of it, like, how Westerners have taken it, it has become a much more fetishized thing. Like, in a way that is, like, very bizarre. But it's become, like, more of a spectacle of overconsumption and, like, eating on camera. And it is, again, like the way it has evolved to like petite women eating a lot. Like I am fascinated with this one woman who has a shaved head and is very petite, but eats like Chipotle burritos the size of her head. Mm-hmm. And like watching her like put a bunch of sour cream on it and shove her face into it. We all know that there's like some other stuff going on there. At least I think so. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But it's a very fascinating side of like influencer content creation that I think is very fascinating, because there's a lot of very porous boundaries I'm learning about what and what isn't fetish content. And when you don't, and if you think it might be fetish content, it probably is. I've just been thinking about this a lot lately because I've been like doing lots of weird deep dives into like weird TikTok content. So that's why I want to watch it too.
Yeah.
I think mukbang is a very weird thing, but also fascinating, even though I don't like the sound. Like, I don't hate the sound of people eating, but it's also not necessarily calming to me. But yeah. It's not always ASMR, because mukbangs are not always ASMR, but a lot of people do ASMR with mukbangs, which is like the tapping on your can and like getting the tinglies.
I can't.
Like, chew aggressively into the, like, and crack things and stuff. So they merge all of these weird things to like make very specific kinds of content for people.
The ASMR stuff makes me anxious. It's not pleasant to me. It's just, no, stop. See, I'm taking
my
headphones
off. I'm so sorry.
I don't know what it is about it. It makes me.
Some people have a really weird reaction.
It makes me want to climb out of my skin. Like, it's not. Like, one of my coworkers will listen to it to fall asleep. Like, she loves the ASMR of them folding, like, folding towels and whatnot. And I can't relate.
I had a friend who would watch, like, makeup, getting her makeup done TikToks. Because it would, like, pretend to, like. Those ones I actually understand a little bit, because it does actually give me the tinglies when someone's like pretending. But then I also get uncomfortable because then the whispering. It's like, I don't mind like the sense, like, but then with the talking and the chewing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a brief history of what I believe is like the origin of mukbang. And I think it is very fascinating and weird.
So the thing about cannibal mukbang that I wish it leaned more into was the actual mukbang-ness of it. Like, he finds out, you know, maybe the stuff that she's eating isn't animal. but there is an angle to this that you might be interested in. Well, I'm pretty sure you'll be interested in, Mary Beth, because there is, like, almost a rape-revenge aspect to what goes on in this film. In terms of, like, who she targets.
Oh, okay.
So there's that, and it was interesting, and I was enjoying it. It's a little rough around the edges, and I do wish that there was a bit more of the leaning into the title a bit more instead of...
That is what I've heard about this movie, is that the title is a bit misleading.
It is very misleading. I would say. I mean, she's a mukbang artist, but like, it's not about that.
It's not as cannibally, I think, as the poster art might make it sound to be. Which, again, fine, but just don't call it cannibal mukbang.
Yeah. But it's a fun movie. I think that cool. It's I want to see what Amy will do next, because there's definitely, like, it's very assured, even though it is a bit rough around the edges, but, like, you can tell that she has something that she wants to say, and she does it really well. It's just, it's, there's some aspects of it that I'm like, ooh, yeah, I don't, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about this, but okay. It's entertaining. There's interesting through line about social isolation and about revenge and that kind of thing. And I think it's a good time. Just don't go in expecting, like, it is rough around the edges. That's what I'll say about it. But I did enjoy it for what it was.
Hell yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah, I definitely need to check that out.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
What about me? Okay, so the first movie that I saw is called Hippo.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Hippo is so weird and so
interesting. It looked very weird.
I described it as a pervert's bedtime story, and it's like Wes Anderson and Michael Haneke had a weird love child with, like, a David Lynch descent.
That's a lot to give me.
I know it is. It's a lot to take in, but I really liked it. So basically, it's directed by Michael H. Rappaport. It's his first movie, and he wrote it with the guy who plays Hippo. And the whole thing cute. Is
sorry.
Yeah, he's a fucking psycho though in this movie. He's a good actor, but oh my god. But so Hippo lives in a like suburb with his mom, who is not like super stable. She has a lot of mental health issues, and then his adopted Hungarian sister Buttercup, who is, and they're both teenagers. And
Hippo, oh, I'm sorry, he produced Pledge.
Yeah, he produced Pledge. The director produced Pledge.
Okay. Sorry.
Which is that really
got really excited
horror movie about fraternities, which I quite enjoyed, actually.
Me too.
When it came out. But sorry this about is that. Oh, you're fine. It's like, it starts off as like a weird slice of life, like, okay, this like boy is spoiled by his mom, has Little Prince syndrome to the point that he thinks he couldn't possibly be human because he's so smart. And his sister Buttercup, on the other hand, really wants to be a mom. And Eric Roberts is narrating this whole thing as if he is reading a bedtime story.
Wow.
And it's all just, like, very weird and, like, very the Wes Anderson deadpan kind of vibe. It's all in black and white. And then Buttercup invites a hookup over to basically inseminate her so she can have a baby, and it all goes incredibly wrong from there, and it becomes a very different movie that I won't spoil, because it's like, what in the actual shit and balls is going on here? But it's essentially like a PSA about sex education for your children and 90s teenage ennui, which is very funny to say, but like,
oh, that's right up my alley, because 90s teenage ennui was me.
Well, yeah, it's like very much like, oh, this seems like very fantastical and like kind of twee and hyper stylized and not grounded. But then once he starts showing you kind of the world outside of their house, you start kind of thinking about the implications. Like, if you've seen Dogtooth, the Yorgos Lanthimos movie, it's not exactly the same at all. Like, it's not, like, a similar story, but the vibes of, like, this doesn't feel real, and then you kind of start introducing the outside world, and you're like, oh, something really fucked up is going on here. It's really interesting how he balances this, like, twee vibe with, like, disturbing and bleak and bizarre. And it's hard to talk about it because, like, the weird shit is just, like, at the end when a bunch of things go, like, horrifically wrong. And I think it's, like, one of these movies that's much more enjoyable if you have zero idea what's happening.
Okay.
So,
does the poster spoil anything? Because without...
Is that... Oh, with the UFO in the background?
Yeah.
No. Literally, his mom... It's literally his mom just thinks that their dad was abducted by aliens, and at one point she's just staring at an egg. There's literally like nothing to do, and like he thinks he's an and he and like Hippo thinks he's an alien, but like, again, that's not really a spoiler. It doesn't give anything away.
Okay.
It seems like it would, but no.
Yeah.
He wishes he was an alien, as a sense. Okay. He's very much an incel. He's like got incel vibes.
Oh, okay.
Very incel vibes.
Yeah.
All right. It's also, I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one, but it's, I liked it. It's weird as shit. It's going to be one of those movies that people are going to be like, you're crazy. And I'm like, well, what can you do? And then the other one that I saw that I want to bring up, it's called Cheryl. And this one's like, it's only 1 hour and 10 minutes long, so it's pretty short. And it's pretty lean, and it's again, it's rough around the edges, but I really liked it because it's essentially about a woman who is dumped by her serial killer boyfriend, and then she herself becomes a serial killer and only kills women to take the perfect parts of their face so she can make herself a new face.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's like very like hyper femme stylized Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibes in a way. And May vibes. Yeah, you're right, Tony. And again, I wish it had been deeper. I wish it would have been longer so it had been like a little bit deeper into like who the characters were, because it feels a little bit like just like an, like it feels like it would have been a really good short. But okay. I think I like the way the story progresses, but because they don't dig as much into the background of the characters, it all just feels very surface level. And at times it gets a little bit like tropey in talking about like women, because the whole thing is supposed to be about like women and perceptions in society. And like, it's very basic in that regard. You know what I mean? Like, it's written by a man and directed by a man, which is like, it's not terrible, but I also think like it kind of misses on like nuances that could have maybe been a little bit more better handled. Okay. But I like the way it goes. I think it's gross. I think it's smart in what it's trying to do. We don't usually see female serial killers like this, and taking like a breakup movie and making it about a female serial killer, but like in a different way than killing boys, but killing women, I think is also an interesting way to talk about internalized misogyny. I think there's something really interesting there. And like the whole movie, she's in heels and talks about like how much she hates wearing heels, but she wants to look perfect and like wants everyone to perceive her a certain way. So I kind of love that. So there's like, again, I think there's some really cool stuff going on here. I think it's definitely a case of it just having a low budget and they're doing what they can with the resources they had. And like, it's pretty, for what they're able to do in terms of like a bloody serial killer movie on a low budget, it's pretty impressive. And like, as smart as pretty smart at the writing level, as much as I wish it had gone deeper, I think that, you know, there's still some really interesting stuff there. So
cool.
That is Cheryl. Yeah, I liked it. And it's, again, 70 minutes. So, like, it's like watching an episode of TV at this point.
Yeah.
Which is like, I think, starting to scramble my brain a little bit. Because, like, I'm like, okay, cool, so we'll get more later. And you're like, oh, no, it's over. And you're like, wait, it's so short. And, yeah, and now like, my brain's getting fucked now that, like, TV episodes are so long. I'm like, wait, hold on. So, very strange.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I might have more. I don't know. I might watch a couple more now that I was looking at the screening library again. I was like, fuck, there is good stuff. Let's listen to some Gladys Knight. And then take a little, cruise leaving onto Erection Cove.
On a midnight train to Georgia. It was 11:45, and I was misinformed about the time. Misinformed about the time. Didn't even get to stand in line. I missed it. I gotta know what you thought of episode 210, with everything from Kenneth
notes.
And the cappuccino machine to Gladys Knight to Liz trying to buy an apartment. There's a lot.
Okay, yeah, I wrote a lot of notes down because I've realized that I literally cannot remember all of the jokes. Because
there's so many.
So I had to write them down. So, well, this episode, again, action-packed. We have Jack Donaghy and Edie Falco, Nurse Jackie, congresswoman girlfriend, I think?
Yes. So earlier on in the season, he meets her at a function, and they have like a one night stand. And then he finds out that not only is she a congresswoman, but she's a Democratic congresswoman and he is Republican. And so there's that. And then like she is also actively suing the parent company that owns NBC. And so there's that is all established up to this point, and they've had like a relationship. And they're trying to make it work. So, yes, he is dating Edie Falco.
So, like, he's trying to make this work. They go to a fucking coal mining town in Pennsylvania. And then Liz is trying to buy an apartment. And then Kenneth gets addicted to the coffee machine that Tracy brings in after he has a nightmare about it. And it's not actually real. And so, let me run you through my notes I wrote here.
Please.
Liz Lemon high-fiving herself. At one point. She high-fives herself.
She does.
This is also the episode where Jack is negotiating to buy a German television station.
Uh-huh.
And we learn that Liz Lemon and also Kenneth speak German.
Yes.
Because the best way to read the Bible is in German, according to Kenneth.
It is. Sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Kenneth has some bangers this episode, let me fucking tell you.
He sure does.
I will say, I would walk all over that floor, Liz Lemon talking about apartments and looking at real estate. Incredible, because that is how I talk to myself when I look at things like that. It's really funny watching this as an adult and being like, oh my god, she really, like, when I was younger and I would watch it, I'm like, this is funny, but, like, she's kind of lame. And then I watch it now, I'm like, no, never mind, that's not lame.
I know.
I am so deeply this woman who is obviously a caricature, but it's so painfully true in so many things. And I'll talk about more of that later, because it just keeps going, especially as a woman in entertainment myself. I'm like, I'm going to cut out my own tongue. Jenna talking about real estate by leasing land in the Ninth Ward back to the government as a prison.
Ka-ching! she's such a horrible person. I love
her. She's such a horrible person. I love it. That's the devil's temperature. I'm talking about hot coffee. And I wrote, Kenneth is me. That's the devil's temperature. So I will be saying this from now on whenever someone asks me why I don't drink hot coffee. This is my favorite line, and I don't understand it. Regrets are for horseshoes and handbags?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Bitch, what does that mean? I was sitting there looking at it, and I was like,
horseshoes and handbags.
Am I not supposed to get it? I don't know.
Tracy.
Okay, sorry, you froze for a second.
Okay.
Okay. What does that... It's hysterical. I'm like, what? So confident in the statement of it. I'm just like, sorry.
That's the thing I love about Tracy is that he commits to the joke so that it sounds like, you for a moment, you're like, okay, yeah, it is like horseshoes and handbags. And you're like, wait, what?
I'm like, who? So I don't know if this is real, but I watch with subtitles because I watch everything with subtitles. And Werner Herzog, his voice comes in. Is that actually him?
Uh-huh. I believe so.
Because the hooking caption said Werner Herzog, and I wrote, is this actually him? As he's saying things like, a urine mirage in a desert of fear.
Industry castrates art. My favorite line.
I was like, what is happening on this day?
It's so wild.
I made a note about how now I'm seeing Tina Fey all over booking.com ads, so this is a very weird set of events that she's
really
everywhere now. Yeah, she's like all, there's like a new booking.com campaign, she's everywhere. Obsessed with how this coal mining town is their special place, which is Jack Donaghy and his girlfriends, and I wrote just, so this is love, do-do-do-do. I did want to throw my cell phone into a pond and almost hit a duck. They have a whole, like, this whole episode is, like, very much, like, paralleling, like, rom-com tropes, mostly. Mostly with Liz trying to buy an apartment and the two of them. The Kenneth one is just psychotic, and that's fine. We celebrate that for him. But, meanwhile, I love this because Liz is trying to get an apartment, and she has to get approved by the co-op board, because New York real estate is a fucking joke and makes no goddamn sense. So, She wants to buy an apartment. They approved her offer, but she has to talk to the co-op board. Has a horrible interview where her
fails.
Which she fails horribly.
I did not read The Lovely Bones.
The Lovely Bones.
And then we have so much in common. We're all white.
White.
Like, oh God.
You have something hanging out of your nose, and I was the social anxiety. I was at that fucking event. I was at yesterday in LA. I looked into a mirror, and I had chocolate right here the whole event, and I was like. Like, this is why I don't belong here. Like, my fucking ass. No, it was coffee. Because I had to get coffee before because I was so fucking tired. I had toddler, like, milk ring, but it was coffee on my lip. And I was like, hi. Amazing.
And no one pointed it out.
Not one fucking person. I was getting my picture taken, and I saw a reflection, and I said, no one told me I look like a toddler. And everyone laughed. And I'm like, it's not funny.
I walked around
this event. With a chocolate ring, a coffee ring around my mouth, thank God I don't live in LA, you know? Like, I can just disappear.
That's a very Liz Lemon situation right there.
Oh, I know. And I was like, some of the other things that happened, I'm just like, this is not funny. Like, I don't like this. I used to think it was such a funny show, and now I'm like, no, this is a little bit too real for my taste. And I don't like it. I love Jack Donaghy's assistant. He is my king. I underrated character, I think.
Mm-hmm. He's great.
He's so great. Good. You rolled the brown serpent when talking about being addicted to coffee. Tracy yep. says this about Kenneth's addiction to coffee, uh-huh. which turns him into a gremlin. A caffeine
he went
gremlin
to a PG-13 movie. Mary Beth.
He did.
He tried on sunglasses. He ate a Jewish donut.
Like, what does that mean?
I don't even know.
I was like, I didn't realize that you could assign religious or ethnic beliefs to a donut, but okay.
Do you think that's what he calls a bagel?
Oh, you know what?
I don't know.
I think you might have cracked it. I'm willing to adopt that as canon.
Okay,
let's do it. All right.
Because, like, every time I hear that, I'm like, incredible. What is he talking about?
I know, because I was like, I mean,
it's New York.
Asian donut bakeries. Mm-hmm. I had Asian donuts at my wedding. And by Asian donuts, I mean, just at a Thai bakery. Anyway, I've been sodomized when I realized.
What I love about that, though, is that when he walks away, Tracy, like, looks down at his butt like, did he? Like, it's the quiet moments that Tracy has in the show are so underrated. Like, that it's just a quick little look. It's not brought attention to, but it's just like I love it so much.
Liz Lemon is insane.
Mm. And I'm here to remind you.
It's like a montage of her drinking bottles of wine and calling the co-op board, like obsessed, like she's calling a boyfriend. And mm-hmm. at one point, I finally clicked. I was like, oh, we're parody. As at the end, when she, like, sees the co-op board. The board. I'm like, we're paralleling romance. Like, rom-coms. I am obsessed uh-huh. with that. It's very uh-huh. clever. Because I didn't see it at first. But, I love how they have that also running parallel with, like, Jack and his relationship storyline.
So smart.
How he takes a call. While she's, like, bearing her soul about her childhood, he takes a fucking phone call. And he's like, you can't have it all. Like, love and success. And I'm like, why is this making me kind of sad?
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I don't feel that way, but I was like, ooh, this is really way more. I'm like, this is rings way more true than I thought the funny show would.
That's why I think this episode is so smart.
Yeah, it is really smart. It's working on a lot of, like, crazy layers that then ends on a musical breakdown because Gladys Knight is a guest star on the show because it is Jack's girlfriend's favorite singer. And we just go re-break into Midnight Train to Georgia as Kenneth leaves and then comes back because he missed the train to Georgia because it's actually an 11:45 train to Georgia. Incredible. Yeah, this is, like, I think this is my favorite episode I've watched so far.
It's this one is one of my favorites because it's like, and it's one that like every time I watch it, I'm appreciating it even more. Like, I love the fact that, you know, up until now we like this season and this show has so many cameos in it, right? And so when they initially say, you know, Gladys Knight's going to be on the show, you're immediately thinking, oh, is she going to be actually be on the show and have a singing number? And they don't do that. They like reverse it, and all of a sudden it's the cast singing, and she only comes up at the last moment to go, hello, I'm trying to take a nap here. And it's just, it's such a funny end to the episode.
So good. They're like, you missed the sound check. Like, they never, they just say Gladys Knight, and then it's just so good. Yeah.
Oh, I love this one so much.
I really love it. And then, but I will say MILF Manor is also pretty excellent.
Uh-huh.
Which is so funny because it's not even a manor.
No, it's MILF Island.
Oh, MILF Island. Oh, MILF Manor
is the actual show. Yeah. The actual show that is absolutely curving on MILF Island.
Oops. Okay, my bad. I'm like, there's no manor. Ah, oh my God. Okay. I've had
that guy can eat my poo.
Grade a class A moron. He can eat my poo. So yeah, so here we have the premiere. Oh, it's the finale of MILF Island. 20 MILFs, 50 eighth graders. I wanna,
and who's the hot mama you wanna? Oh, you know.
Eating bugs in exchange for tampons. So it's essentially like Survivor, but with hot moms and adolescent boys. And this is airing in the background as there's basically like a whodunit as they're trying to figure out who talks shit about Jack Donaghy in on page 6. Who said he was a class A moron and he can eat my poo? You know, really mature things that page 6 would definitely report on. And also, Hornberger,
yep.
Right? Gets caught in a vending machine. In a horror movie that actually I would watch. So yes, it is sound psychotic out of context, because it is psychotic. Like, every episode is psychotic. It is like, it is like what my brain is like when I'm not on my ADHD medication.
Do you have notes for this one? My favorite moment is when Jack Donaghy is very excited that Don Geis, who is the CEO, is gonna call him, and Jack is like, do you think he'll call me Jackie Boy? Then I'll be at Erection Cove.
I screamed. I was just like, I am obsessed. It's so funny. And at one point he is asking Lemon to write for like a new season, and I wrote, I would write on MILF Manor, because I kept thinking this was called MILF Manor. Yeah, so that's that on that. I would sell my soul, and I did love the conversation about it being like, that's not art. What we do is art, and it cuts to Tracy like, oh no, someone put too many farts
in this engine. It's about to explode.
Yep.
And then she's like, I have integrity. And it cuts back to him going, it's farting, it's farting. And then the funniest part is her saying, mute.
So I wrote that down. I have integrity. Because she, and it's like in the captions, it's spelled MYRIT is like what it is written out in the captions, which is so fucking funny. And I was dying here. I was like, yep, this is literally a conversation that, not exact, but I literally had to have I have integrity conversation yesterday about something. And I was like, my eye is going to start twitching.
I wondered because like a lot of
you're
this
watching
show,
this and you're like, oh no, my female friend who is like in a kind of media position is watching this and wanting to absolutely kill herself.
Yeah, basically.
It's true. Every episode I'm like, I am Liz Lemon, and I don't know what I think that I don't think it's as much of a bad thing as I would have thought it was a couple years ago. But,
yeah, oof. No, I see a lot of myself, particularly when we get to the next recording, there is a line in here that is totally like, I was like, oh God, I am Liz Lemon.
Yeah, I literally wrote, this hurts so bad. I have integrity. Eating bugs to earn tampons. Mm-hmm. Another, just incredible. One of my implants exploded and I didn't even get off
The catapult.
Yeah. And I wrote, I would watch this horror movie about a man trapped in a vending machine, especially as he's throwing his phone and then calls himself. I was like, I love the show. This is incredible. This is everything I've ever wanted. And obsessed with burning the bikini tops when they get voted off.
Yes! Yes! Brought to you by SoyJoy.
What was it like? The shower confessional sponsored by Dove Pro Age. Yeah. You have watched the show Lemon, see? As you should. I was like, oh, that's like me when I say I don't watch things, but I can tell you exactly because I'm like, unfortunately, tuned in. Ugh. Mm-hmm. But then we have, again, the whole whodunit thing of being like, oh, Liz Lemon actually said the bad things about Jack, but she doesn't want to own up to it because Jack makes up a story about being labeled a class A moron. Oh. Yeah, I'm saying they're fucking with each other this whole time, which is very funny.
Yes, but what I love and what I started to, like, realize after, like, I've seen this multiple times is the way in which, like, And the show does this a couple times, and a couple of the episodes we're going to talk about does similar things. But it's like, it has like the storyline about MILF Island, and they're all kind of backstabbing and lying and manipulating, while also in real life, Liz Lemon is basically Deborah, and she is, you know, lying and manipulating and trying to like get her game. Like push through her game, while also Pete is doing the physical challenge of being stuck in the machine, while everyone is forming alliances, which always happens in like these Survivor-esque, you know, Big Brother type shows. So like it's a microcosm of what's happening on screen happening in the show, and I just, whenever that happens, it makes me so happy because it's such good writing and it's so smart. The plotting in this is just it's perfect for me.
Deborah or Deborah?
Because of course
I cannot believe that MILF Manor is real, you know what I mean? Like, this was like what, 2010 or whatever the fuck, and then
I think 2008 maybe.
Wild. we are a parody of something.
I'm waiting for Bitch Hunter because that was also a show on 30 Rock that starred I think he was playing a character, I don't think it was supposed to be him, but it was Will Ferrell. And he just knocks down doors and says he's going to arrest you, bitch. And it was like called Bitch Hunter. It was on this season too at some point. So I'm surprised there hasn't been that because like the amount of stuff that this show does that like ends up being prescient is too much. It's too much.
Oh my God. Also, just really going back to episode 210 real quick. I was also dying that he talks about buying a small German, the German station, and it's just very David Zaslav of, like, acquiring all of these little places and building a media empire. Did you hear me? Or did I bitch out? Did my thing bitch out?
No, I heard building a media empire.
Oh, okay. So I was, basically, it's just very funny to see this with Jack trying to buy the German TV station, and it mirrors David Zaslav to me, and it's like continues to impress it now, because again, like, that was what was happening then, I think, was very similar to what like Zaslav was doing in 2008. It's just very wild to think like, wow, things just got weirder, you know what I mean? Like the media landscape just got fucking weirder, and it's weird to watch this in 2024, like with that kind of context in mind. It's very bizarre.
Oh, I cannot wait till we get to the episode involving a politician who's running for like a local election that is very prescient on how politics are now. Like, this show is wild to watch in 2024, considering that, you know, it was the early aughts when this was running. And now to see, not only is there a MILF Manor, but like just everything that it's talking about just feels so much more real now. Like, I really wish there was more 30 Rock happening right now.
Isn't It's like, it doesn't feel like, I know it's parody, it obviously is parody, but it doesn't feel like watching it now.
No,
it's not as funny. It's hilarious.
No.
But there's such like a darker shade over it watching it now. And you're like,
Yeah, and so like here's the thing. So like this episode has a lot of like ads for Soyjoy, and what I found out. So there was an article written on New York by Emily Nussbaum, who was talking about. Yeah, me too. She was talking about product integration, which is a big thing this season of 30 Rock.
This was and the writer's strike season, right?
Mm-hmm. And so she was upset because there's three integrations that she knew of at this point on 30 Rock are Snapple, Verizon, and Soyjoy. And she says, I didn't realize Soyjoy was an integration, though. I assumed it was a joke, like Sabor de Soledad,
so
Liz Lemon's favorite snack. Then weeks later, I saw Soyjoy tank top in Us Weekly. I Googled, and sure enough, Soyjoy, fortified with optimism, is literally the tagline. Yeah. But yeah, the idea of product integration in this, I think 30 Rock has done such a fun job of it, of making it so you don't know if what they are selling you is like real or not. And it kills me.
I agree. Because I thought Soyjoy was a joke, so.
Yeah, me too. I literally just Googled it before we recorded because I was like, is Soyjoy a joke? It's not.
Fascinating. All right, well, where are you taking me next?
Okay, so next week we are entering season 3 of our 30 Rock journey, and we're going to go with the very first episode, Do-Over, which is really funny about Liz Lemon she wants to adopt, she wants to have a kid, and so this episode is sort of about that. And then we also have a one called for Gavin Valor, which is an episode in which... there's a line here that I quote all the time to my friends when we're playing video games and something. Yeah. So I just want to tease that out. It also has a great guest star with Steve Martin is in it. And it's just, these are two delightful episodes.
Okay.
So yes, wow. Do-Over and Gavin Valor.
Okay. I'm very excited.
So that's next week, but also, who are we talking with on Monday, Mary Beth?
So I just need y'all to know, I'm going to tease. We have some like really cool guests coming up. We talked to Larry Fessenden about Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. So if you haven't listened to that yet, you really should check it out. It was such a good conversation. Larry is a legend. So it was so cool to talk to him. This week, our next episode, we are talking with the legendary Stephen Graham Jones, like... a modern Stephen King, even though Stephen King isn't dead necessarily. But yeah, you know what I fucking mean here. Author of the Angel Lake trilogy, The Only Good Indians, Mongrels, Night of the Mannequins. We spoke with him mostly about his comic book True Believers that's being kickstarted right now. Talked a little bit about some of his work. And then mostly we dug into why The Howling terrified him growing up. And this was my first time watching The Howling. And as a teaser, I am now obsessed with The Howling. So get ready for a really good conversation. Stephen Graham Jones really knows his werewolves too. So.
Yeah, it was great talking with him. It is so wild that we talked with him about The Howling. And then to go from that to talking with Larry about Blackout, werewolf movie. So it was weird synchronicity. And boy, we're recording with someone tomorrow that I just, some ones, I should say, tomorrow that I can't wait to reveal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Y'all, it's cool as shit. It's really cool. I'm proud of us. We're cool.
So cool.
You have heard from us. We want to hear from you. Are you seeing Abigail? Have you already seen it? Have you read The Day of the Door? What are you excited about from Panic Fest? Yeah, let us know everything. You can email us at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on social media. I'm at mbmcandrews on Twitter and at mb.mcandrews on Instagram.
And I'm at Gaily Dreadful everywhere.
And of course, you should be following the podcast everywhere. We are on Twitter and Blue Sky at Scarred Podcast and on Instagram at Scarred for Life Podcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. The Rondo Awards have closed now. Hopefully you guys voted for us. But please support us through rating and reviewing and subscribing. And if you want to help support us financially, we do have a Patreon.
Yes, if you voted for us, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I have no idea when we find out.
Next week, probably. I think.
Is it next week?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's what the website said.
Oh. I'm like, this summer. Next week. Either one.
I think that's what the website said.
Yeah. So, thanks so much if you voted. And if you didn't, that is okay. There's hopefully next year. Fingers crossed. But thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. And thank you, everyone, as always, for listening. Please stay safe and healthy out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.